Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
When I took over the store, it came with an assistant manager and a driver and a handful of other people who had already been there. In fact, some of them had been there 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And a couple of them were convinced that I probably wasn't going to be the manager because, you know, they thought it was their turn. You can imagine trying to step into a role as a leader where you're not much older than anybody else on the team. You've already been appointed the leadership by the people up above, but the people below you, they're not so ready to be led. Yeah, that was the journey that I had in my mid-20s. We're going to talk a little bit about leadership in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. It really is fascinating how often people get promoted to a position of leadership because they've been around for a while. They've paid their dues, so to speak. Often we see it in sales organizations where someone gets promoted because they've got great sales numbers. They've performed well. And because they've been a great salesperson, they get promoted to a sales management position. And then we realize they were great at sales. They're not so good at leading other salespeople. Because leadership is a skill all on its own. It's different from sales. It has to be. Now, there are a lot of techniques. There are a lot of expectations when it comes to sales that are transferable. Good communication skills. The ability to read other people. The ability to be articulate. The passion for the product or service that you offer. A deeper understanding of the product or the service that you offer. All of those are actually really good things to comprehend and apply when you're in management, when you're in sales management, when you're in organizational leadership. You should know the product. You should know how to read people. You should understand the pricing structure. You should know how to negotiate. You're going to have to gain buy-in. Maybe it's not to write a check for the product or the service, but they're going to have to agree to do the things that you want to get done. Those are all transferable skills. But the ability to lead people and salesmanship are not exactly the same. There are a lot of expectations that go along with leading other people that don't transfer to sales at all. There are also those skill sets that are necessary when you're producing a product, when you're providing a service. I know many, many great web designers or administrators or architects and engineers that are phenomenal at the job that they have, not so good at leading people. I also know many people who lead who couldn't do the job of the people that they lead because the task is too complicated. It's too specialized. An administrator over a hospital, for an example, might have been an MD at one time. It's unlikely. They're probably more well-versed in the ideas of hospital administration, the business side, the management side, the how do I get people to show up on time? How do I get them to do their job well? How do I get them to perform at the highest level? How do I keep friction within the workplace at a minimum? How do I get people promoted when they should be promoted? And how do I get rid of people that shouldn't be promoted? All of these skill sets necessary to run a hospital do not necessarily translate to being a brain surgeon or a heart surgeon. Or an ortho, or a dentist. That doesn't mean they can't run a medical practice. It just means they didn't practice medicine. It's funny when we move into other areas of business that we don't see those same dichotomies. As a firefighter, I remember working within an organization where it was possible to get promoted. In fact, we had a young man that was in his mid to early 20s who had tested every time the test was available to him, had made his promotion, and because there was nobody else in his age range and his time in service of the same rank, he escalated very, very quickly. But I also remember there were times that in his very young age, he had been promoted so many times, he was in charge of things he had never experienced. In fact, there were people who were lower ranked than him because of his testing scores and his aggressiveness at getting promoted. There were people that served under him by rank who had more experience on the job. That's an ironic twist. Well, that's kind of the position I found myself in my mid to late 20s when I came out of the Air Force and I got hired into a retail position to manage a print shop. And the day that I applied for the job, I told him, I said, I've got a job now. I just saw the listing in the paper, but I've got a job now and I need to give my 2 weeks notice. But my fear is if I give my notice, they're not just going to fire me. They're going to fire me and keep my last paycheck. And financially, I'm not in a position to go for 2 weeks without a check. So if I give my notice, are you willing to hire me sooner than that? And he said, well, yeah, in fact, I'll go you one better than that. If you'll just simply walk out on Friday without giving them a notice and start for me on Monday, I'll pay the 2 week check you're going to be missing as a signing bonus. Wait, what? Who's ever heard of such a thing? Now, here I am, a young guy straight out of the Air Force with no college degree and no serious management or leadership experience besides what I had in the military. And this guy hires me into an organization with 250 employees and says, I want you to take over this one retail location. Well, for the first 2 weeks, they trained me on all the practices, the applications of the business and another location under the regional manager. After 2 weeks, they moved me to the new store and put me in charge of that store. Well, it came with a team. We had a driver. The driver was a guy who drove for four or five stores, but he was based out of our store. And he would drive delivering the products that we had. He would pick up things from the main print shop and bring them back to our store so we could deliver to the local customer. He would pick up things that we had shared the responsibility with for another store. And he would deliver sometimes directly to the client. In my opinion, he had a bit of a drinking problem. In fact, there were many occasions that he would show up at 7 o'clock in the morning, walk in the door, clock in, and he would smell to me as if he had bathed in Coors Light. I don't mean like he'd maybe had a couple, but maybe he spilled a couple on his way here, that kind of covered in alcohol. And I reported that several times and said, it concerns me. If I can smell it on him, surely the customers can. And if that's not bad enough from a PR standpoint, good grief, what happens if he actually is intoxicated and has a wreck in the company vehicle? That's just a frightening concept. But the regional manager was a good buddy of his, and so every time I reported him, that report was destroyed before it ever made it to corporate. Well, the list just went on of the kinds of things that I dealt with. I had an assistant manager who was promoted to assistant manager from a regular customer service person, promoted to assistant manager as the other manager was being fired so that the regional manager could make him the store manager by telling corporate, look, he's already an assistant manager. We're just going to go ahead and promote him up. But the corporate office hired me in that spot instead. Yeah, instant friction. All right, I'm not just telling you my story for the purpose of telling you my story. Here's what I want you to understand. Back in the day, the idea of being an entrepreneur, running a business, was coming up with a good idea. Well, you got to come up with a good idea. You got to find something that the marketplace needs. Back in the day, that was build a better mousetrap. Find something that's already out there where the market demand is already expressed. Look for an idea that people are already using and do it better. Make a better car. Make a better broom. Make a better mop. Make a better hat. Make it better. Find out what the market already wants, what the people are already buying, and make the same thing, only better. Maybe cheaper. Maybe more abundant. Maybe make it last longer. Make it function better. Make it more efficient. Make it operate easier. Make it better. Find a mousetrap. Make it better. That was the primary rule of growing a business back in the day. And then along came the, well, make it better, make it cheaper, make it faster. If somebody else came up with an idea, the question was, could you be faster to market? Hence, we had the computer wars. In the late 70s and early 80s, in the 70s, when I was a kid, if you had a computer, it was the size of a refrigerator, and it had these reels on it, these data reels, and they had to run, and they took up lots and lots of space, and they weighed tons and tons of weight, and they cost millions of dollars. Now we have more computer power in our cell phone than what took the rockets to the moon the first time. And I don't just mean what was on board the rocket. I mean half of what they had at NASA. The computing power that we have in greeting cards supersedes what was on the rockets that went to the moon. When you understand that, the speed to market thing changes exponentially. I mean, you've got Rivian and you've got Tesla and you've got how many other auto companies racing to make the best electric cars? Well, that's a race. It's a race to success. It's a race to accomplishment. It's a race to who's got the better one faster, who can have the better price, who can have the better performance, who can have the better product. We've gone from just a better mousetrap to speed to market. And then along comes the digital age. And it's not just about can you make a better product, but who can promote it better. And so promoting that product kind of changes everything. It used to be that if you wanted to promote a product, it would take millions of dollars to create a television campaign. Millions of dollars just to get it filmed, to get it produced and edited and ready for television. Then if you could actually find your advertising marketplace, the people who are going to buy the product that you want, what shows do they watch? When do you get on air? Along came the infomercial, and we would do 30-minute television commercials. 30 minutes about one product. Ron Popeil's Pocket Fisherman. A 30-minute television commercial? Do we really need that? Well, apparently in the day we did, and it made millions of dollars. Now we have an entire shopping network, multiple shopping networks, where people can sit around all day and do nothing but watch 30-minute commercial after 30-minute commercial, or 20-minute spiels with 15 different products, where everything on the show is something to buy. We are a consumer marketplace, especially in the West. We have seen a massive evolution in how we promote, though, when, again, these little handheld devices have better cameras than many people would have had in their studio 10 years ago. I have three cameras facing me in the studio right now. I'm not using my phone because it doesn't integrate with the switcher as well to be able to live stream what I'm doing. And when I have guests in the studio, it's a whole lot easier to have three cameras on tripods and a live switcher than it is to have one cell phone chasing people around. I use studio cameras for that purpose. But I could film the same thing on my iPhone. I filmed it on my iPad when I started it 9 years ago. The reality of the progression of technology has changed the way we play the game. And it hasn't changed the game, but it has changed the way we play the game. So now that we have the digital age, we have the way to get speed to market for our technologies. You can buy things that make your progression and your production significantly faster. You can minimize the amount of time and the amount of people. You can build a better mousetrap, or you can even invent something newer than a mousetrap, easier to work with than a mousetrap. And now you can get it to market. And if you don't want to buy television ads or a 30-minute television commercial, you can just buy an ad on social media. You can have your own page on social media. You can have your own website where you've got your own shopping network of all the products that you offer in one place. And with just a QR code, people can find it. The game has not changed much, but the way we play the game has changed drastically. You know what hasn't changed in all this time? Even with artificial intelligence, even with virtual reality, digital currencies, virtual real estate, have you heard about this? There are people who have actually bought real estate within a virtual world in Meta. Millions of dollars of real estate in a virtual world that you can't touch, feel, or see. You can only get there with VR goggles. It's in a place that, well, you can't visit. You can't go there and mow the grass. You will never feed your cat there. Well, maybe if you have a digital cat. But even in that world, we come to one final conclusion, and that is this. People lead people. If you're a leader, unless you're a shepherd or the dog whisperer, or a veterinarian, maybe a horse wrangler or a cowboy, chances are you lead people, humans. And if you lead people, then you need to understand that leadership development begins and ends with who? Business development as an entrepreneur begins and ends with who? The product to market begins and ends with who? If you don't realize that, then you don't realize that the first question you've got to ask when you're bringing a new product to market as an entrepreneur is, who's going to buy it? Let me ask that question another way. Who do you serve? And how? What do you offer them? What do you provide them? What are they going to get from you? Is it a product? Is it a service? Is it a new way of doing things? Is it a new skill? Is it a new idea? We live in the information age now. It's not just the digital age. It's the information age, where what we sell is, well, what we know. Well, in the same way that you used to have consumer reports and I don't know about you, but I still use consumer reports and online reviews, and you got everything from Yelp to Google reviews to determine whether or not a product or service is worthwhile. A whole lot of people get to chime in on the quality of a product and their experience with it. That's a whole new world. Consumer reviews used to give us the opportunity to look at a car that we're thinking about buying and see what everybody else who's bought it thought of it. What kind of safety rating does it have? How does it perform? How does it do on fuel economy? How does it do on reliability? How comfortable is it on a long ride? We could look all that stuff up without having to experience it ourselves. See, the challenge with the information age is information is a commodity that can be easily manipulated. And yet it still depends on who. My mentor, John Maxwell, says it's not just what you learn. It's who you learn it from. In the information age, we peddle information. We sell information. We sell knowledge. How many people do you know who say, I'm a coach? I'm one of them. I'm a coach. I coach people on leadership with a focus on communication. I call it Story Power Coaching. StoryPowerCoach.com if you're curious. But I find, and my clients find, they may think they've hired me as a speech coach. But the transformation that takes place in their life, in their personal relationships, in their business relationships, in the way they lead, in the way they conduct business, in the way they see themselves in the mirror. Those things all change when you change the story that you're telling. If I dissect your story and I just look at a couple of words, odds are you're going to ask, why did you pick that word? And I'm going to ask the same question. Why did you pick that word? Why that word? Why did you say it that way? Why? Well, because in the end, digital age or mousetrap age, advertising or social media promotion, whether you're selling mousetraps or you're selling information, people lead people. And in the end, the way we communicate with each other is about integrity. And although we may have artificial intelligence and virtual reality, authenticity is of great value. What you have to say comes from deep inside you. It bubbles up from the who that you are. It's a combination of your experiences and your information, your knowledge, your wisdom. When we begin to tie those things together, what we see is that what comes out of us is the consummate evolution of everything that we've put into us. What we've lived through, what we've studied, what we've researched. And I have to say, time and time again, we find ourselves in a place where we're asking ourselves, is the information that I've gathered true and accurate? Are the people that feed me information, are they honest? Are they integrous? In the end, people lead people. So from the beginning of your market research, who will I serve and how? Who's the audience? Is there a big enough audience to support the product that I want to create, the information that I want to peddle, the books that I want to sell, the speeches I intend to give, the mousetraps I plan to sell, the websites that I will build for them? Are there enough buyers of that product to make it worth being in the marketplace? If not, then my idea should be reconsidered till I find a bigger audience for the thing that I want to sell. Once I've done that, I've identified the who, the audience, the buyer, the consumer. Once I've identified that who, then I have to ask the next who. Who is it that's going to help me build it, provide it, produce it, service it? Well, that may be a team of people. That may be a team of robots. That may be a digital product that can be created once and multiplied tens of thousands or millions of times. But who still comes up? Somebody has to be able to produce the product, present the idea. Well, now you've got to market it. You've got to promote it. You've got to tell the world that it's there. Who's going to help you do that? Maybe you're looking to create a product that AI is the product, and AI promotes itself, and AI sells itself, and AI collects the money, and AI runs it. All of a sudden, you're not in business anymore. A robot you've spawned is. If you're going to be in business, though, the recommendation is that you have a bunch of who's that are your buyers, and a bunch of who's that are your producers, and a bunch of who's that will help promote it, market it, advertise it, sell it, manage it, Manage the money that comes in when you have it. Scale it up to the next level and ask, how do I make more of these? How do I find a bigger audience to these? How do I adjust the price of these? What can I do to make more profit margin? Margin, not just production and sales, but margin. Is it profitable? That answer is going to come back to, who? And in the end, you're going to ask yourself, why do people lead people? Well, because people are the primary marketplace, the primary production factory, the primary management system. And if you're going to be working on a commodity that is a skill, that is information, the best tool set you could be developing is leadership development. Because I don't care what you sell, I don't care who you sell it to. In the end, people lead people. People manage tools. People utilize tools. People use tools like social media, like AI, like virtual reality, like a manufacturing plant, an assembly line, a chainsaw. People utilize tools. People manage tools. People lead people. It's a skill set that is absolutely invaluable to learn to lead people. If you have a hard time leading people, you should probably spend some time learning that skill set, mastering that skill set, learning to communicate, learning to read people, learning what it means to be humble and yet be confident, to be bold and yet be compassionate, to be authentic and yet to be empathetic. And if you haven't found that balance, I don't know, here's an idea. Get a coach, specifically a leadership coach. Somebody who's been trained to ask you the hard questions that you probably don't want to answer. The ones that when you look in the mirror, you start to ask the question and you think to yourself, I'm not even going to say that answer out loud. I'm not even going to say that answer in my head. I don't really want to cope with the answer because I don't like the answer. Those are the kind of answers a good coach is going to ask you to provide, to mull over, to meditate on. Because the ones that you don't want to even answer to yourself, those are probably the roadblocks that are stopping your life. Ask those tough questions. Even if it means you shed a tear, punch a wall, scream at a stranger, you got to get past those things. You're going to have to fix them. Probably going to have to, big word, change something in your life to be a better leader, to be a better person, to be a better who. Yeah. Because in the end, everything in business, everything in leadership development begins and ends with who? Because people lead people. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.